you aspire to become the president of Kenya?
I'm after a position that can give me the full authority to control everything else in my country. You see, if you dream low, you put less struggles and less effort to achieve it.
Did you feel intimidated?
I was going to be those people pants down.
People don't go from becoming a cobbler to the top job in the country.
Yes, I was a cobbler and I was also a barber. But it's the people who do the cobbling that suffer from the top job in the country. I was the second person in my village to join university. I had to cut down a tree, take back to school so that it could be used for my school fee.
From the zone where you are treading, it's a very delicate zone.
No way I'm safe. You're balancing between the safety of being poor or the safety of being a politician. Politics is only one of 999 ways to die.
I'm curious, what is your political mindset? How do you think we could build a more structured Africa? Young people who shy away from politics, what do you say to them? A fist on your heart. What does it stand for? You always have that every time.
Oh.
What's up, my friend? Welcome to this episode of DRAB. And before we jump into today's episode, I'd love to specially invite you to take 10 seconds and join our 21,000 plus smart friends on emails. I've been sending out emails for the last couple of years, and a bunch of friends always write back. Thousands of them will say that this is the favorite thing that they look forward to on the internet. So once you join our 21,000 plus smart friends, you're going to get an email from me once every month. Plus, you also receive an email every time an episode like this goes live. If you're brand new to the community, I'd love to say welcome. And this is the space for you. So please hit the follow button so that you can get notified every time an episode like this goes live. And also, don't forget to check out the links in the description for really helpful resources that can help you to connect with the guests and also to kickstart with whatever thing you're building. What's the fist on your heart? What does it stand for? You always have that every time.
Oh, this feast is more of like revolt or revolution. So it's a feast for revolt. And it's either meant the revolutionary spirit in me. Of course, I borrowed it from Thomas Sankara Red Beret, but mine was more of revolution. So the beret is purely also part of revolution. But my feast means resist. So it's a feast for resisting. And you have to resist many things, including the Babylonian system in Africa. You have to resist the puppets and so many things. You have to resist poverty and so many things in Africa. So to me, it's a spirit of resisting whatever is going on in Africa. And in the process of resisting, how do we plan to overcome them?
So first of all, I think I should welcome you properly. For those that might be listening to this, I would say that this is one of those episodes that you listen to and you get inspired, right? So today's guest will give you a reason to get inspired when you listen to his story, his journey, and his aspirations. And I may not have introduced him before, but now I'm introducing him to you. He is my friend, Pidgin Odimwengu. He's the founder of Youth for Youth Revolutionary Declaration and a man who wants to become Kenya's next president. So my friend Pidgin, happy to have you on this seat so that we could have a conversation at this point.
It's a pleasure, my friend Ari. It's been long since we connected, but it's glad that today at least I'm coming here to be hosted by you. So yes, I'm happy to be here. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to a fruitful conversation, my friend.
What was your early childhood, or what has it been, the journey with you, your early childhood? How were you raised as a child? And the point of you transitioning to your political aspiration?
I was born in a county called Homa Bay County, from, of course, an ethnic group called the Luo community, who are the River Lake Nilots, part of the Mega Nilots community. In a family of course, polygamous family, my mom became the second wife to that family. And then I became the first born to that family in a family of five. Basically, it's a poor family, so my father became a tea plucker in a colonial tea estate called the Finlay's Company. And then my mom got married to my father as a second wife. And then basically my life started from the tea farms in the colonial tea farms in Kericho, somewhere called Kericho, where my father could wake up in the morning, be rained on as he plucks the tea for the white man who owns the company. Then he could get something out of that. So I did my nursery school in that setup. Then from there, I went back to home in Homa Bay County in a village where there was no electricity. Then I continued my education until class 8, which is the primary education. From there, I was taken back to the village again. So in the villages again, I went for high school. One of the sad moments in my high school, when I joined the Form 1, I was not able to have a seat in a class. because the class was full and many students had come. So I had to sit on a stone in a secondary school. So I placed a certain stone in the next corner, and then I was sitting on that stone as I was able to actually listen to what the teacher was teaching. Well, in a class of 98 key students or pupils, then I was actually appointed to be the class secretary, the prefect of that class, despite of sitting on the stones. So basically, I was from the four family in the setup. So there I got to get in touch with the education system. I became a football captain. I'm a good footballer, more than you. And then I became a football captain. I was in the religious union as a chairperson of the Christian Union. I was then appointed the assistant school captain, which is the head boy by then, or school president. Then I became the school president in Form 4. And then one time in my life when I was close to Form 4, I lacked school fee. Therefore, I had to go back home and told my parents that there was no school fee. There was nothing actually we could do. So I had to cut down a tree. There are so many eucalyptus trees we have. We had to cut down a tree using a saw on our hand. So we actually split the tree with our hands on a saw. Then from there, I was able to get a cut from a neighbor. I took the cut, of course, then I had to put the different pieces of firewood so that I could take back to school so that it could be used for my school fee. So that was how I took the firewood. I was a head boy, so I could come to school on a cart, pushing a cart towards the kitchen so that I could pay for my school fee. Then after that, I was able to be back to school after 1 month. I did my secondary education. I became the third student in that group of class. Then I was lucky enough to get to a university from a poor village. In fact, I was the second person in the village to join university. Then I have to go back to my parents to help them do their tea plucking in the company. So I was employed at the age of 18, trying to look for my hustle and my survival. And that's how I did it. And then I went to university. From the university, I started, I studied education. I became a teacher bit. Survival was very hard being from a poor family. But I managed. In my third year, I was elected the university student secretary general of the student union. I actually campaigned with no money. Then I got elected. I served my comrades for 1 year until I graduated. In fact, during my graduation, my parents could not even afford any transport to come and actually witness my graduation. So I graduated with nobody from my family. I graduated alone. Then that's how I left there. I came back to Nairobi. In Nairobi, I joined the slums of one of the biggest slums in Nairobi called Mukuru Kwa Ruben, hosted by a friend, and I started my life like that. I'd move on to that life, and then from once I left university, I started directing my political party because I thought I was now ready to be in the political scene to correct these mistakes and so many problems I've gone through in my life, which I believe actually are attributed to the leadership. So that's how I moved my life until now where I am. Now at least I have a wife and I have one kid who is also young a bit, so I'm trying to push my family forward. That's basically my little introduction.
Right. That's really an interesting story. And as I listen to you, I kind of think, you know, for example, when you, I don't know how vested you are like with pastors and the rest, but you always hear, and even in the Bible, you're going to hear about this conversion story, right? When Paul in the Bible is, before he became Paul, he was Saul. He was King Saul. And at the point where he had his transformation, where he encounters the angel and then changes his name from Saul to Paul and starts to start preaching the word of God. And instead of persecuting Christians, he starts helping them. And as I listen to your journey from the time where you had to sit on stones in primary school to working your first job at the age of 15 to being the secretary general for your school, in your school association, when was that moment for you when you went, politics was the thing I wanted to do? What was the trigger?
Basically, leadership has been our family, because when I was growing up, my father was a village elder within the villages, so he could actually manage the villages. I think when I left high school at the age of 18, I became a captain of a football team where there were elders. People were almost age 43, but I could manage them. But all along, it has been my passion to serve, to make a change. I think at the age of 20, It was on 2016 when I was in my second year working in the tea farms. My parents actually had a demonstration. There was a protest. They were complaining, or they were protesting against what you call the collective bargaining agreement. There was an agreement with the company to increase some dividends. But the company was not ready to do this. So by then I was employed. I could do casual jobs, maybe trimming the fences, maybe carrying luggages, painting. I could do those on odd jobs. So I decided to participate in that demonstration as a casual employee. And then when I went along in that demonstration, in fact, I walked 42 kilometers to and fro. It was 22 kilometers to town and 22 kilometers back on a heavy gumboot on my foot as I was joining the protest. Then I met the management in front of my parents and I told them one thing. My parents and our parents have been rained on in these tea farms, but as they were rained on, they invested to ensure that they actually educated somebody like myself, so that one day you will be able to speak the English on their behalf to actually put forth their struggles. And I'm doing this today bravely without no fear that I have to actually tell you as the management that what my parents go through and other parents go through, they deserve their right. And if that will have to cost my job, so be it. But I will not let them down without speaking on their behalf because they have been rained on investing for my education. And I spoke that, and my parents, many parents applauded me. It took 1 year after all, but the parents got their money. That's the first courage I had. But I was never violent because even in campus, I was able to balance actually the student strike. I could be able to mitigate the student strike to push for diplomacy. But even in that diplomacy, I was actually proposing rationality. So I served my student diligently. I remember sometimes there was a student who was arrested and then she was jailed and she was having a young kid and she was trying to work on a restaurant. When we knew this with the leadership, we went to the prison and we saw the lady there. We organized everything possible and she was brought back to court so that her sentence could actually be that she served the sentence outside the court so that she could take care of her kid. And these were just simple statements that I had. When I was a student leader, I could have students who did not have even accommodation. I could share with them my room and my house so that I could accommodate them so that they could survive. And all along, it went to so many things and incidents that I came and stood on behalf of the students. So my love has been all that. And my best service to me is actually doing the best for the people. I care about that so much.
In 2020, you aspire to become the president of Kenya. And first off, why become the president of Kenya?
In all my life, I've aspired to be in a position that could make change to life directly. I stopped looking for, of course, great people and start thinking of creating great people. And I knew when you have the authority, especially as a president, you have full control and power to actually change your country. Because you can command the members of parliament, you can direct them to what you wish to be done to the people. But when you become a member of parliament, actually you are under the command of the president. And no matter how good you can actually try to help your people, if the system that is run by the president is against the people, you might be the only sheep in the wilderness trying to seek what is justice, and it might not work out. So I really wanted to go for the right position that gives me full authority to actually control every resources in my country and direct them to what I feel is needed mostly. And that's why I said, no matter how many years it will take me, I'll go for that position. I'm not after only political position for popularity or for money. So when I go for president, that's what I want. And I know with that position, I can be able to have power to control resources, control the loaning of my country and the debts, and control everything else that pertains to the welfare of my people. So that's why I wanted to go to that position.
Right. The interesting thing about your story is the journey you're taking right now. When I read your story, saying that you are a cobbler, and you have your shoe mending shop, as well as you have your own barbing salon. And I was thinking, you probably get this a lot. There are people who will be like, you could easily just focus on your job. But now you're running you want to run for president, and probably you get a lot of people not believing in you. And how do you handle that? And what is your word to these people or to these critics who say you can't just have it that way?
Thank you for that. But it's the people who do the cobbling that suffer from the top job in the country. I wanted to come straight from my cobbling to the presidency so that every struggle of the people is fresh in my mind. The current president, he was selling chickens in 1992. Do you think that experience is relevant to date? It's over 30 years ago. So I wanted to go straight for the presidency. You know, Sankara said one thing. It took the madmen of yesterday to act with that, what they did, for us to act with reality today. When Nkrumah wanted to be the prime minister of Ghana, he went for it. When the Mau Mau fighters in Kenya were fighting against colonialism, they went with machetes. They never had guns, but they believed with commitment that with their machetes in the forest, they could liberate the country. You could have asked them, why did you start with something more important? But it's only people who see what they have within themselves that limits themselves to their success. Sometimes they say, if you dream low, you put less struggles and less effort to achieve it. But if you dream higher, you put more struggle actually to achieve it. And even when you fall high, you don't fall low. Until when will, even if I become a member of County Assembly of Parliament, will I be seeing other members of citizens of my country suffering another part of my country? And just because I'm not their member, I'm a member of this side, I cannot work it out. That's so limiting my resources and limiting my potentials, you see. Actually, change is not an individual thing. Everybody plays their part. So you just respect what you have to play here. Let somebody bring what you're missing, then somebody connect what you're missing, then together you'll make a complete team.
That's interesting for you to think about it that way. And in 2022, you were up against, I'm sure when you sat down and you looked at the other presidential aspirants, Ruto and the rest, was there any point where you said you were like, did you feel intimidated by maybe the other candidates or by your aspirations, and you get to the point where you look at yourself, you're like, maybe I can't get it? And if there was, how did you deal with that at that point?
In fact, I was sure that I was going to win. If I was to be on that ballot, I was sure I was going to win, because I knew one thing, that the majority of voters are the poor people like myself. Majority of people who wake up are the young people like myself. Majority of the people who were to wake up were hopeless and desperate people like my parents and many other parents. And I knew that if I was to be on that ballot and be given opportunity to even speak what I have for them, they could listen to me. And that's why you see, William Ruto won. He actually won based on these poor people. He lied to the poor people, bring together poor people, and he told them that he was poor like them. And the poor people united irrespective of their tribal differences, and they voted him in. Imagine now if me, the real poor person or the person in that group, if I was to speak to my people, I could have made it. And I know it was not to take anything else, because even if you are buying votes, my friend, can you buy 9 million people, pay them for them to vote you? You can only pay maybe 100,000, but the rest will follow you based on what the feel is about. So I was quite sure that I was going to beat those people pants down, because I had known the situation that the poor people and the ordinary citizens were already desperate for a change.
I'm curious, what is your political mindset? And I know that I watched an interview where you started talking about what you support is being a peaceful revolution. And you talked about by ballot, where the people elect who they want through the ballot. And I know, especially for most African systems, and I could tell you firsthand from what we experienced in Cameroon, we have a president who has been there for more than two decades. And what happens every time is that there is always the idea of, yes, this is a ballot, this is from the ballot boxes, but it is still opposition leaders and several other people still think that the ballots are questionable. But I wanted to ask you, at this point, what is your political mindset, and what do you stand for around politics and leadership itself?
Basically, I stand for anything Pan-African, anything in the interest of Africans and the interest of my people. And this go along with so serious things that I identify very crucial in my life, which start from access of education, the healthcare for my people, and I take them as free and public service delivery. I'm actually so pissed off with the process where our states and our country actually start privatizing these vital things. If you privatize education so much, whereby education is only left to the hand of private investors, who actually don't offer education for the purpose of somebody to be educated, but they offer education as a business for them to get some money. It's really pissed me off. It means that for you to be educated, it depends on how rich you are. Leave alone even that. I'm also having issues with that education system. We need to have, actually, to my mind, we need to pan-Africanize or Africanize the education system. We cannot be learning too much of the Western education system that is in Africa in the syllabuses, and we forget about our own histories or our own issues. You see? So I really think of aspect on how can we actually pan-Africanize or decode the education system to work to the interests of the people. Today, of course, yes, I'm graduated and I'm saying I'm learned, I'm a teacher. But I'm learned to the angle of a white man, not to the angle of a black man. We had learned people in our societies who never went to any school, but they were learned. But a system that only determines that you're learned because you have a degree, and even after that degree, you are jobless because you are told there are so many people also learned like yourself, it doesn't make sense. So education was a crucial thing to me. Healthcare was a crucial thing to me. Today, people will die wherever they are because they don't have money. My friend, even if you're sick today, you will die because you don't have money. But it should not be like that. Why should people toil so much and the government collect taxes from these people? And the government is not a company. A government is only an entity to provide these services. They collect taxes in trillions, but they cannot offer even medication for you. So as a poor person, these are things that I really found very important to me, that access to social services and the welfare of our people should be the supreme law that guide us. It also actually pains me when I see the number of jobless young people like myself and so many out there who are educated. Surely, why should you have a parent or a family spend millions of money to educate their son and their daughter just for that son and daughter to be a beggar again? So these are so many key things to me, but I believe that it is time that we must actually look at ourselves as one people and build our country as one, but actually work on the social welfare of our people. There should be no anything that is very important to an individual or citizens that is left in the hand of privates. Let the private people carry out things that are not basic. They can run their movie shows, they can run anything that they find is good, luxury things, but basic things to the people should not be sold, should not be commercialized, you see? So these are part of two things that I totally believe in, but I have also read democracy a lot. But let me tell you one thing, there's no democracy in Africa. There's nowhere even in Africa trying to practice democracy. If you read the tenets of democracy, I'm a member of Interparliamentary Union. Even it talks of free and fair election. You've said in your Cameroon it has never been free and fair. So tell me, who can claim that they are practicing any democracy in Africa? Democracy says that they rule by the people for the people. But this is the rule of the rich for their own interests, not for the people. So there's nothing we can even question about democracy. But I know, as you've said, I chose the ballot, not as the end, as a means. Nkrumah organized a program by PADMO in Ghana to train African leaders and support them for liberation. There's lack of support and training for the next Pan-African leaders. So we Africans are not planning for the next phase of leadership. We are only complaining of this.
How do you think we can solve this?
By doing the right thing, by actually organizing a Pan-African leadership for the younger generation. Organizing and redesigning our education to actually speak on a Pan-African angle. Our education system must actually go back to the what is essential for our continent, you see? You see, the white man out there, they're being taught the mineral of Africa, and they don't have any mineral there. But we are here taught about Christopher Columbus. We are taught about the history of the First World War. We never even took place in Africa, you see? Well, then they are now out there trying to organize and teach them where our resources are. Those people out there know the resources in Cameroon and where they are and how to manufacture them. They even know the value of that. How many kids in Cameroon even know the minerals in their country, the net bar value of that, and how much it costs them to have that? So we need actually to start pushing for changing the education systems. Actually, we need to actually push for the leadership of Pan-Africans. Start teaching young leaders like myself or the younger leaders to be the next Pan-African leaders who can compete with these white puppets who are now being trained today. Then let's invest our money for African leadership. Pan-Africans and Africans in diaspora have a lot of money that they can even create a bank equivalent to IMF that can be loaning and running African countries. But why are you not doing this? Africans are not poor. The richest man, of course, African man is Dangote with $11.7 billion net worth. If you can come together with all African wealthy people, they can create a bank to help Africa. But why are we leaving Africans to go beg in IMF and World Bank? So we need actually to put all our hands on deck and work on the African we want, or else we'll just be complaining for people who are producing for us leaders. You see, like now, they are still training our military leaders. Why should they do that? Why should we stop the military training to be done in Africa? Because they're training our military leaders. In some countries, they even pay the salary of our military leaders. How shameful is that? We still go back to their loans. Why don't Kenya loan from Uganda to build Kenya? Why don't Uganda and Kenya and Tanzania to collaborate to build something? But Kenya will leave Uganda and Tanzania and they'll go to China to borrow money to do something instead of working with neighbors. So these are things we need actually to do. And those are the solutions.
What's up, guys? If you're watching this, I just wanted to break here to give you some important news. So we have just launched the Smart Club, which is my private mentorship club for anyone who wants to learn a high income digital marketing skill. Whether you're building your personal brand, whether you want to become a freelancer, a service provider, or your goal is to learn the skill and get a high income digital marketing job, the Smart Club is the place for you. We have 12 plus digital marketing skills that we're going to teach you through live classes. So every week for the next couple of months, I'm literally going to mentor you personally and make sure that you reach your goal with your digital marketing skills. So down below, I just wanted to break and give you a very quick shout out. Down below, there's going to be a link. Make sure you check it and enroll before you keep watching the rest of the video. And I look forward to seeing you on your very first club session.
You're bringing up a lot of very, very interesting points, which I think they are very thoughtful as well, and that I've heard a lot of people talk about. But I wanted us to talk about the practicality of it. For example, let's talk about building a society, an African society, where people are very leadership conscious, where the young leaders are raised to take over power, to lead the right way, and also to assist power, not just to lead, because not everyone can be a leader, but to assist the people in power. How do you think we could build a more structured Africa that leads to better governance and a better people?
It is through our education system. You see, the English you're speaking today, you're speaking it because it was in an education system.
Right.
The chemistry you know, the chemistry you know, the history you know, and anything you know is what you learned. So why don't you put these right things in our education systems? Maybe in topic like governance, why don't you have a subject on governance to be taught from primary to university? Put it in so many categories you want. Start from the basic of what is governance. Move it like that until when somebody reach actual university, he knows governance, but governance in Pan-African angle. Teach about maybe resources like minerals. Why don't you start introducing a curriculum where even from kindergarten, somebody knows what's a mineral. As they move along, once they graduate, they even know how to actually manufacture that mineral. What's the net worth of that mineral? What does it cost? If we do this, we will build actually conscious people. And out of those conscious people, we can get conscious leaders, you see? Leaders come from the people. There's no difference between that somebody's born a leader, categorized him differently. Train everybody and train the kids. And the best African can do now, if we can train and put that curriculum from starting now, in the next 20 to 25 years, we can produce those leaders we want, because they shall have gone through all the process and they graduate, and we know they are conscious enough to defend the continent. But we don't train them in that way. We give them things that are very far away from the reality in the community. We teach them things that even they don't interact with daily. And that's why even morals, you see, Ngugi wa Thiong'o said in his book called Decolonizing the Mind, that language is a carrier of culture. The more you learn somebody's language, the more you embrace their culture. So over a period of time, even today, we are naming our kids the Western names. Nobody could name your kids your grandfather name. You name them the Western names. When they grow up, they want to be Westernized and civilized. They do not take any pride on being African. But these things we can change if we put it right from the education system. The only way we can win this war is through the education system. And the only way we are colonized is through the education system. So if we don't actually go back to what we teach our people, we cannot build a society that is conscious enough in the next 20 or 25 years. But if we go back there, we can build whatever we want. Because your education actually informs your character, your personality, your thinking, and everything about you is based on how you're educated.
Let's talk about the mindset that we have a lot in most, I would assume, most African countries. And I heard you talk about this in one of the interviews. You said when you are repairing people's shoes, sometimes they'll come and ask you, they'll share stories with you like, hey, this politician came X and X yesterday and gave us X and X amount of money. And they're like, when is the next coming? When is the next coming? When is this coming? Or when is this politician coming to give some more money? Or the next politician who is coming, are they actually going to give us more money? And I think we see this not just in Kenya, like you shared in the interview, but also in Cameroon, in different places where we have a problem with the people who always think for the now, where they are giving peanuts, I will call it, to sell your future, because per se, that's what it looks like. And what do you think is wrong with our people? And how do you think we can start to change things from the perspective of having people really, really just not be praised to those kind of mindset, and even with the youths that are growing up and the people that we have coming up in Africa?
Somebody said that poverty is the worst, actually, violence. You see, rich people do not have time even to listen to those politicians. But because you are poor, we'll also have time to listen to these politicians sometimes. And I will tell you, somebody will tell me that, I don't have a job today. I don't have anything to eat today. If I go to that politician rally and he gives me maybe 200 Kenya shillings, I can buy for my kids milk. The key to all liberation is the economic liberation. As long as you are poor, sometimes it's very hard even to say anything. Nobody even regards you. Nobody even thinks your opinion matters most, you see? So if we will not fight poverty, we might not succeed in actually liberating our people. But now we need to put what we call the political education, not civic education, political education. Let's have programs that my party is, of course, planning to do. Let's have programs, sit with these people and speak to them and ask them, yes, candidate so-and-so came, gave you 200 shillings. Can we calculate how much is he earning per month? This X amount of money. Now, how much was he getting? This X amount of money. What has he done to you? Where was your kid? Your kid was sent out of school because they never had school fee. Did that politician come for you? He never came for you. So when you start picking such education, we can actually even enlighten and awaken the elder generations, you see? And they can sacrifice, my friend. It takes some little sacrifice for you to make and achieve what you want. I'll tell you again, when our Mau Mau fighters went to the forest, they sacrificed. They stayed there for days even without food because they knew what they were fighting for and they had gone through the problems that they go through. Today, I will tell you, poor people who elected William Ruto in Kenya, if he was to go back to them today and ask them if they would vote him again, 80% will say no because he actually went against what he promised them and they're now suffering hardly. The people ride what you call motorbikes for commercial use. Tell me, my friend, the fuel is increased daily. My client cannot now come because I have to increase my fare. They don't want to use my boda-boda or my motorbike. So I'm going home hungry. My motorbike is staying at home there, you see. So at least now they're experiencing the consequences of bad choices. And these are what need to be reminded to them. But see, who occupied the political positions during the campaign? The same liars, the rich people. So they will never speak to the people this right, what I'm telling you about. Because the people who should speak this, are the people who are experiencing this problem, do not go out for political position. The only thing that they were born voters. So people will always come as the rich people, will always come with money. So if the poor people can come out and start going for these political positions, they can speak to each other about this. But because they don't care, that's why they must be awakened and know the power we have in this political position, that they can transform their life using those political positions and the life of many people around them. And that what they are going through are the effect of the political choices.
What do you say to young people who shy away from politics? What do you say to them? Someone who is like, I can't do the politics. I don't want to get myself involved in politics because there's some things that I can't understand and I can't control. What is your word to them?
Politics will continue controlling them if they don't want to control politics. That's my simple word to them. Politicians will continue making them poor. Politicians will continue making them desperate. Politicians will continue misusing them. So it's either they get into politics to control what they want, but don't think that somebody who don't go through what you go through will actually do what you go through or will understand it when you get elected. So wake up, join politics and control it. If you don't, it will control you.
Wake up, join politics and control. If you don't, it will control you. Let's talk about on the leadership side. One of the things which I have a couple of friends in leadership, or senior friends, I would say, in leadership, and I have been opportunity to be close to a few. And the thing that always stands out for me is there is the realities. There is something that we call the realities of leadership. Now, the realities of leadership is you want to get into a specific role, you succeed getting into that role. But again, within the parameters of how you can act, you are tied to certain rules and regulations that have already existed. Until you get there, you won't be able to know some of these things. And then on the flip side of it, there are the people who become leaders and completely forget where they came from, as well as just not even upholding to the manifesto that they talked about while they were being why they were campaigning. What is your answer to that, and how are you approaching that yourself on being familiar with the realities of what your office is going to entail, but on the flip side, also being in touch with what is happening and making sure that you keep to your manifesto?
I would say, like those who wrote the Bible say that they were false prophets. They are still also false citizens. And also maybe out of serious problems people have gone through, sometimes when they get position, they want to enjoy and forget it. So yes, I'll say, being young does not make you a progressive leader or a good leader. Being old, being a woman, being disabled does still make you one. It is your upbringing and what is in you. You see, they say that money makes reveals people. People believe that if you have money, you'll change. You don't change. You actually become who you are. So it sometimes, I would say, it's a challenge, yes. But sometimes there are people who have come up, and based on their experience, they have actually controlled leadership and help. There are people who have done that. And there are people who have earned extra mile and do it. So I'll tell them that, yes, they talk of experiences internally. But I've also challenged this issue when people tell me that you are not experienced, you don't know what's going on. I ask myself, if there's any continent with the experience, it's Africa. Africa is the only country that has leaders who have been there for over 30 years. Now the question is, how has that experience helped liberate Africa? How has that experience helped Africa enjoy the experience the leaders have? How has that experience liberate and make the country better? And you'll tell me very well, even the country with the highest experience are still poor. So actually, I don't think that leadership experience helps anything. If there's anything it helps you within the political spins, it helps you how to corrupt and loot without being known. That's the only thing experience you get inside there. How can you loot people's resources, and how can you be a liar to lie to people with fake manifestos so that you can be elected? But in terms of leadership, how does it help you? Tell me, who in African leadership as a president will say that his experience helped him to become a better leader? Because none of them in Africa today has actually done something better enough to liberate the African people. If you say that age is also becoming an issue, Africa is the only country with the oldest presidents. Now, have those old presidents changed their country? And then the next thing I'll say, leadership is actually a combination of the experiences you've gone through in life, your upbringing as a person, and your internal integrity and your internal perspectives and vision as an individual. That's what makes you a leader. It's not anything else. But I say leaders also need to be checked, because power, as they say, the absolute power corrupts absolutely. There need to be a proper balance and check system that ensure that when somebody gets corrupt, he gets out of the system. It's not that everybody will get in clean, actually will finish clean. Some might be tempted by the money and the power thing, but get them out of the system, you see?
Yeah, but I wanted to ask you, the zone where you are trading, it's a very delicate zone. And as well, I think that you have sat down to think about it. Politics comes with its own challenges, not just with you having to manage the lives of people, but also with your own security challenges. And how do you process things like that around maybe family and all of that? And what's your thought process around it?
Oh, thank you. Is being poor a safe place to be? It also have some dangers. You can be you can die because of diseases, because you don't have money. You can be shot because you're poor. So nowhere is safe. You're balancing between the safety of being poor or the safety of being a politician. And you see, even during the COVID period, people were told to be on lockdowns. But when there were no food anymore in the house, people had to choose between dying because of the hunger in the house or dying out there with the COVID. So sometimes we know actually what to go through. We can actually choose to risk the fears we don't know and go out there. Then in the process, we can be able to understand and adapt. People have gone in that field and they have survived. But if we close ourselves in our room of comfort, we might die here, not knowing we could make it out there, you see. Then what will you give as an excuse? That, you know, I was afraid of going out. I was just comfortable being here. It's like staying in the house with your family and you tell your kids, no, you see out there are so many thieves. So let's just stay here. Then they die of anger because you are afraid of going out there. Comrade, even you living where you are to where you are today, it's not that you are sure that it's going to be. And it's not that it is comfortable wherever you are. I know that home was also comfortable, but you risk to go out. And it's not that you're safe still, you're struggling. And wherever you are, you know, with this racism and anything else going on, you still have to struggle harder. But you chose at least to die struggling out there than actually dying at home here without doing anything. And there's the courage we must have. If we don't choose the courage to go out there and try in the political field, we may die poorer forever. without getting the right resources we need. So the best we can do is to go out. Yes, security things come in, but at the end of the day, you see, I'm alone. I've told my family I'm going to politics. I've told my wife and my kids I'm going to politics. So if I die, let them know that I went there and died for that, you see. But I cannot sit back and tell them every day when they ask me, you know, we don't have paraffin or we don't have flour or we don't have bread. And I'll tell them, you see, the government has made everything hard. So let's just accept and let's not eat. It will be very hard for me to tell my kid and explain for my kid every day all this. So I better go out there and change it so that other parents will not be facing this problem every day to being asked, Father, we don't have food today. And the father will be saying, you know, I went out there, there was no money. So let's just accept and sleep like that until when we'll die sleeping like this. So let me choose the risk to go out there. And if I have to go, even when you're driving your own car, you can die. So why do you fear death? Even in your own car, you can get accident and die. So there are so many, there are 1,000 ways to die. Politics is only one of 999 ways to die. So why do you choose it? So why do you fear to go there? So that's what I'll tell you generally, that no matter how risky it is, there's nothing that is not risky. They say that fear created gods and fear preserves them. Fear made us slaves and the fear continues slaving us. If we don't wake up and dare to do something, the Chinese dared to do something. They woke up and did it. The Singapore did it. The Indians woke up and did it. We Africans still afraid. I don't know, when you become a revolutionary, Nkrumah was killed, Sankara was killed, Gaddafi was killed. Then how many are those people? There are 10 people who are killed. How many Africans do you have? 1.4 billion people are still alive. So can they kill 1.4 billion? Continue going. They'll never kill all of us. They'll kill few, but we'll still wake up and do it. So let's not be afraid of death, because we have a population of 1.4 billion people, Africans, who are depending on us. So will you leave all of them to die because you're afraid of our own life? If it has to be the sacrifice, let's sacrifice it for the freedom and the liberation of our people. But you should, as it said, you should never die on your knees. Die on your feet.
I could keep listening to you for the next 1 hour because I feel that just listening to you, I'm sure those who are going to watch this will definitely just start to picture themselves and their lives. But we have a tradition on these interviews, and at the end of it, we always ask our guest, what is one unpopular opinion that you have which people will find very fascinating about you? And I'm curious what you have to say about that.
Well, my opinion is that there's no reality. I'm not controlled by reality. I make the reality. So don't tell me this is the reality. I create the realities, you see. Because even that reality you're trying to refer to me to, somebody made it reality. So why do you want to bound me with the realities? Me, I don't work on realities. I make my own realities. I know that's what is so unpopular to people. People will tell me this is the reality, you see. You're trying to do it, but this is the reality. Who made that reality? Somebody. So me, I make realities. Don't tell me of realities. I'm not controlled with the realities.
Pidgin, I want to say thank you for accepting our invitation to be here. And I want to thank you for sharing your thoughts, your journey, and just what makes you as a person and your aspirations. And I hope that most of these things work out very well for you. I'm looking forward. We always joke and I tell you all the time, if you don't become president of Kenya, when I become president of Cameroon, we're going to talk about it.
You know, R.E.B., you've been my friend for some time. And you see, we grow together. You see, when Nkrumah became the president of Ghana, he brought Padmo, who was not Ghanaian, to work with him in Ghana. So if you become one, bring me to Ghana so that I can work, Cameroon, so that I can work with you. If I become one, I'll bring you here because this is our motherland. We will work together. Thank you very much, my friend.
If you did enjoy this episode, then the chances are that you're going to love other amazing episodes that we have recorded. So don't forget to check that out in the description. And also please hit the follow button so that you can get notified every time an episode goes live. Down in the description below, you're going to find links to connect with the guest, as well as links to other really helpful resources. So don't forget to check that out. And like I always say, my friends, cheers to many more years of shamelessly living and crazily excelling passion and purpose.